I want to thank Lamar and the elders of Hua and however y'all came about giving me the opportunity to stand before you and teach. The first time I made that attempt was down in Luverne, and it really, to me, it went horrible, and I left there in defeat and depleted. But nevertheless, over time, I'm here. And whenever I found myself in a place and I was nervous, I always think about Mr. Sam Smith, like I think Jeremy had told him that I would be leading a song down in Selma. And I would say, out of wisdom and knowledge, he stepped to me outside in the lobby. He said, William, whatever you do, whether it's singing a song or praying or teaching or preaching, we as men have made mistakes. And don't forget that. In every situation that I am in and have been in since then, that wisdom and that little knowledge I took along with me. And y'all know Belshazzar and the story and Daniel, and when the handwriting on the wall came and it recorded how his knees was clacking. It always took at me, and that's basically how I feel now. But I'll be okay. And I use that nervous energy because it really helps. By way of introduction, the topic is good deeds pertaining to Christ and his miracles. Accusations pertaining to those that came against him, as the Jews and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and Sanhedrin courts. And envy, fueled by their pride. Jesus Christ was and still is the Son of God. He never said anything bad about anyone or lied on anyone, only meant good for mankind. Now, these are good deeds, and we all have to be impressed with them. He made the blind see in Mark 3:22. He made the lame walk in Matthew 9:1. He healed the deaf and the speechless in Mark 7:31. He fed the 5,000 in Matthew 14:15. Wouldn't you be impressed to have even been or thought to been around something with such great magnitude? But yet and still he faced opposition after opposition of Jewish leaders and the Jewish people seemingly on every corner. Now, the Bible records 37 miracles in the New Testament, and 7 of these miracles came out of the book of John. And again, I tell you, Jesus only meant good for mankind. Notice in John 3:1-2, John 3:1-2, and all of this sermon will be coming out of John. Now, Nicodemus made a very wise decision. You know, just being attentive to seeing these first two miracles, and then we come around to the third one, and then Nicodemus had sense enough to say, you know, and 3:1-2, he says, there was a man from the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. This man came to him at night and said, Rabbi, we know that you have come from God as a teacher, for no one could perform these signs you do unless God be with them. That's common sense thinking. is something more to this man called Jesus Christ. And Nicodemus, I guess, saying, well, I don't want to be bothered with all the hassle and the bustle of the other ones in my ear trying to persuade me not to go. So I take it upon myself and I go to him and inquire of myself. And within that, and all that conversation, Nicodemus came away a more wise person. Because he's recorded down through John on three or four more occasions, even to the point of defending him in chapter 7, and also a part of his burial. That was the same Nicodemus. So Nicodemus was wise. Now, we'll look at five accounts in John. There's a lot of them that it can really be, could have been used. But I'm going to give the definition of doing a good deed is something that is done to perform or accomplish an act. An accusation. A charge or a claim that someone has done something illegal or wrong. An envy. A painful and resentful awareness of another's advantage. So I'm going to try to put this together so we can understand why and how I got here. Because it's in my own personal study that I just began to start looking at it. Because always just, it wowed me because of all these good things and miracles going on and good teaching and situations where Christ is just being calm and presenting himself with authority, and you got these rulers just will not let it go. They look past the miracles, they look past all the wise teaching, only to find reasons to go against them. In one, and chapter 5, this is the third sign, chapter 5 and 1 through 8. It says, after this, a Jewish festival took place, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. By the sheep gate in Jerusalem, there was a pool called Bethesda, in Hebrew, which was five colonnades, I can't pronounce that word. Within these lay a large number of sick, blind, lame, paralyzed, waiting for the moving of the water, because an angel would go down into the pool from time to time and stir up the water. Then the first one who got in after the water was stirred up and recovered from the whatever ailment he had. One man was there who had been sick 38 years. That's something you just really have to think about. 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying, and he knew he had already been there a long time, he said to him, do you want to get well? Asking the question, do you want to get well? He said, sir, the sick man answered, I don't have a man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred, but while I am coming, someone else goes down ahead of me. Get up, Jesus told him. Pick up your mat and walk. I would have been very impressed. That was a very good thing. This was a miraculous thing, a good thing, a good deed. Verse 10, here goes the accusations. Now that day was the Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, this is the Sabbath. A good deed now. It's illegal for you to pick up your mat and walk. they have totally dismissed the miracle because they are so caught up and indwelt in the law. Go down to 16 of the same chapter, 16 and 18 through 18. Therefore, the Jews began persecuting Jesus because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus responded, "My Father is still working, and I am working also." This is why the Jews began trying all the more to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal. Again, looking past the greatness of the significance of what just happened of this man lying there for 38 years to keep throwing up the Sabbath. So Christ says, "My Father's working, and basically, so am I. He never stops working, so why should I not do this on the Sabbath?" And Christ always having that advantage over them because he knew them, but they really truly didn't know him. Because as we get into some of the other ones, we'll know that they're going to say, "Okay, this is, we know his father and his mother. Who is he? Or who is he supposed to be?" So I'm going to go into that second account in John 6, where he's talking about the bread of life. And he's teaching them. John 6, in 28 through 36. "What can we do to perform the works of God?" they asked. Jesus replied, "This is the works of God, that you believe in the one he has sent. What sign then are you going to do so we may see and believe you?" This is what they asked. "What are you doing? What you are going to perform? Our fathers ate manna in the wilderness, just as it was written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat." Jesus said unto them, "I assure you, Moses didn't give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the real bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the one who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." Then they said, "Sir, give us this bread." "I am the bread of life," Jesus told them. "No one who comes to me will ever hungry, and no one who believes in me will never be thirsty again. But as I told you, you have seen me, and yet you do not believe me." 37 said, "Everyone the Father gives me will come to me, and the one who comes to me will never be cast out." This is a good thing. He's given them a more better and more simpler way out. And again, we go to the Jews down there in 40 and 42. "Therefore, the Jews started complaining about him because he said, 'I am the bread that came down from heaven.' And they were saying, 'Isn't this Jesus,'" here we go, "'the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know, how can he now say, I have come down from heaven? They fail to realize of his deity and his greatness for what he has done, because they are only looking at the physical, and Christ is continually trying to bring them out of the physical to the spiritual, to look at things a different way, giving them all this wisdom. Go down to 52, and here we go again. At that, the Jews argued among themselves, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? There they go in that physical mindset of thinking. Because they sitting down thinking about a roast, eating his flesh and really drinking his blood. But when he is literally speaking in a figurative language, they have just taken it all out of proportion. They are disgusted with having to eat his flesh. And this is not what he was talking about. And they missed the whole point of his teaching. That was a good deed to remind them who the bread of life was. And here he comes against this opposition time and time again throughout his ministry. The next account that really caught my eye, and I read these because this was my personal study, and I was just reading after so many years of just reading it, and you begin to start paying attention. But in John 7 and 15 through 19. Lost it. Then the Jews were amazed and said, how does he know the scriptures since he hasn't been trained? Jewish tradition, being raised in it. Jesus answered them, my teaching isn't mine, but is from the one who sent me. Anyone who wants to do his will, he will understand whether the teaching is from God or if I am speaking of my own. The one who speaks for himself seeks his own glory, but he who seeks the glory of his own who sent him is true, and there is no unrighteousness in him. Didn't Moses give you the law? And yet none of you keep the law. Why do you want to kill me? Good teaching. But right behind it, verse 20, accusation. You have a demon. There you go. Because you fail to understand his message. The crowd responded, who wants to kill it? As again, Christ know all things. Now listen over into the same chapter down in 25. Here go the back and forth between the Jews. Some of the people of Jerusalem were saying, isn't this the man they want to kill? They ain't talking about sitting them down and having counsel with him and, or, you know, let's have a discussion. They want him dead. Because he have came along and he have just robbed them of all their little thunder, all their chest beat. We want him dead. That's just bottom line, point blank. And then they accused him of being a devil. The next one would be in chapter 8, 1 through 12. Chapter 8, 1 through 12. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. And at the dawn, he went to the temple complex. And all the people were coming to him. And he sat down and he began to teach. This is the woman that was caught in adultery. Then the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, making her stand in the center. I guess in the center of the floor. Teacher, they said to him, this woman was caught in the act of committing adultery. In the law of Moses commands us to stone such a woman. So what do you say? Basically, what do you think? They asked this to trap him in order that they might have evidence to accuse him. Jesus stooped down. I've always loved this because when you put it in your mind's eye, with all the calmness in the world and all the wisdom, this is what he did. Just a simple thing. Jesus stooped down and he started writing on the ground with his finger. Then they persisted in questioning him. And he stood up and he said unto them, the one without sin among you should be the first to throw at her. Then he stooped down again, and he continued writing on the ground. And when they heard this, they left one by one, starting at the older man. And they left with the woman in the center. And when Jesus stood up, he said to her, woman, why are they? Has no one condemned you? Because they really thought that they had him at this point. And just that simple question then. After he gave them that one question, then everybody got up and started leaving in defeat. Because he got them again. Go on reading. It says, no one, Lord, he answered. Neither do I condemn you, said Jesus. Go from now on, and do not sin anymore. Here come the accusation. And down in 13, he says, so the Pharisees said to him, you are testifying of yourself, and your testimony is not valid. They're basically telling him you're a liar. To his face, you're a liar. After he just did a good thing by giving this woman love and compassion, when y'all have taken up stones, and you're ready to kill her because you want to go by the law. And what Christ is saying, the law is basically being done away with. There's something different. There's something new that's coming along that trumps all of that blood and gore. All of those ways they handled the law and how they mistreated and done people under it. That's why the other ones that read earlier where Christ is telling them that, you know, Moses gave y'all the law and y'all don't even keep it yourself. But you want to put it all on these people. So lastly, we're going to look in John 9 and 1 through 12.
This one always got me as well. Because by this point, they're really booing. How they go after this blind man and go after his parents and go after him again and threaten to throw him out of the temple. That just behooves me that they are continuing to overlook the vastness of what's going on. John 9 and 1 through 12. As he was passing by, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples questioned him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Down in 3 it says, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," Jesus answered. "This came about so that God's work might be displayed in him. We must do the works of him who sent me. While it is day, night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." After he said these things, he spit on the ground and he made some mud from saliva and he spread the mud on his eyes. And he said, "Go," he told him, "wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he left, he washed, he came back seeing. His neighbors, this is interesting, his neighbors and those who firmly had seen him as a beggar said, "Isn't this him who sit begging?" Some said, "He's the one." No others were saved, but he looked like him. He kept saying, "I am the one." He got to convince them of who he is. Therefore, they asked him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" He goes on to tell the story. He said, "The man called Jesus made mud, sprayed it on my eyes and told me go to Siloam and wash. And when I went, I washed and I received my sight." "Where is he?" they asked. "What did he do making you see?" That's just me paraphrasing. "I don't know," he said. 13. Here it goes. They brought the man used to be blind to the Pharisees. The day that Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes was the Sabbath. There we go again. They worry more about the law than what is really going on in front of them. So again, the Pharisees asked him how he received his sight. Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God. He doesn't keep the Sabbath." But others are saying, "How can a sinful man perform such a sign?" And there was a division among them. That means it's arguing, fussing going on now. Because everybody's just confused of what's going on. Some really know what's going on. Some in that crowd know that this is a miracle. And some just, you know, so anxious to get back to the Pharisees and say, "Well, you know, I don't know. It could be him, couldn't be him. If you've been around him all this while, you know that he's been blind." That's my thing. In 31 it says, and here we go again with this opposition. "We know that God doesn't listen to sinners." Now he's a sinner. "But if anyone is God-fearing and does his will, He listens to him. Now they sort of understand what's going on there. Good deeds, accusations, and envy. In conclusion, John 12. And this one they couldn't wrap their head around either, so this is what they decided to do. John 12 and 9 through 11, it says, "Then a large crowd of the Jews learned that he was there," talking about Lazarus. "They came not only because of Jesus, but also to see Lazarus, the one he raised from the dead. Therefore, the chief priests decided, hey guys, we're going to kill Lazarus too. This should really knock all of his fame out. Because he was the reason, down 11, reason many of the Jews were deserting them and believing on Jesus Christ. Christ as well as Lazarus was good men. And still they were sought to be killed for just simply doing good. Let us use every opportunity to do a good deed and never refuse to do good." Paul says in Galatians 6 and 9, "Don't be weary of well-doing." And lastly, all these false accusations were fueled by pride, envy, and jealousy. And that's my lesson. I hope that is something we just something that I looked at and been just noticed in my own personal study, and hoping that it do y'all some good as well. With that being said, if there's anyone that is not a Christian, I would like to come into that household of faith, or someone who might have fallen away from the faith and want to come back into the fold. We can do either as we stand and sing the invitation song.